Okay, so now we're at the ninth stage, but we still don't have calm abiding. So now there's some more things we need to do to get the full calm abiding. Because calm abiding is a single point of concentration that's conjoined with the pliancy of mind and body. Remember when we were talking about the first hindrance, the first obstacle of laziness? The actual antidote to that was pliancy or flexibility, which is a serviceability of both the body and the mind so that you can use your body and mind no matter however you want to. Yeah? So, you know, you don't have to face aching knees and, you know, a banana's mind and a hurting back and, all this restless energy in your body and you can't sit still because you can just feel it all jumping around. So there's none of that anymore. The body and mind completely pliant. So that's a, you know, especially the mental pliancy is a mental factor that we really need to develop here. So when that's kind of complete, then, and we have the single pointedness, then we have actual calm abiding. But to go from the ninth stage here to the calm abiding, what happens is that as you familiarize yourself with concentration, the bad physical states, which are due to different kinds of energy, the Tibetan word lung or the Chinese word qi, you know, the different kind of bad energies in the state, in the body, because concentration is getting stronger, these energies are beginning to become subdued. And so at a certain point, some of these kind of energies are leaving the crown, leaving the head through the crown, so there sometimes might be some sensation at the crown of the head. As these kind of bad winds or energies are leaving. And as soon as that has happened, then one has mental pliancy. The first thing you get is mental pliancy. So the mind is really flexible now, completely flexible. You can do with your mind whatever you want. And so the mind's totally serviceable. You can put it on the virtuous object. It stays there. It's really great. Okay, so there's a lightness and a clarity of mind and an ability to use the mind in any way that you want to. And by the power of having this mental pliancy, you then get a wind, an energy in your body that's called physical pliancy. And this is a physical serviceability, okay? It's a physical quality where now your body is completely serviceable. So your body ceases to be a problem as you're meditating. It doesn't, you know, get in your way. So there's no sense of hardship when you're meditating. You can use your body for, you know, whatever you wish. There's no kind of coarseness or uncomfortable or bad physical states. So the body, they say it feels very light, like cotton. And like all the winds, the internal winds are pretty mild and subdued. The body's very light and it's very flexible. And they say you feel like you could ride on your own shoulders. Whatever that means. Your body's so light that you feel like you could ride on your own shoulders. Okay. So this physical pliancy now leads to what's called the bliss of physical pliancy, which is a very blissful physical sensation. Okay, so you have the mental pliancy, which gave the physical pliancy, which now leads to the bliss of the physical pliancy. And as you remain in concentration, you get the feeling that your body has just melted into the object of meditation, and there's no sense at all of other objects. And at this point, you have a bliss of mental pliancy. Okay, that's the next step. And here, the mind is very joyous. And you feel like you can concentrate on every atom in the wall. Okay? You know, you don't have to kind of make any effort. You can just concentrate. You feel like your mind's so fine-tuned, you can concentrate wherever you want to. But the mind seems so joyous, almost as if it's going to explode and it can no longer stay at the object of meditation any longer, kind of almost as if the joy is a little bit too much. And so it kind of peaks, and then it settles down. and it becomes more stable. So kind of like the intensity of that, the bliss of the mental pliancy kind of settles down, it calms down, becomes more stable. And at this point, you get what's called an immovable or an unchangeable mental pliancy. And this is one where the bliss is very stable, the pliancy is very stable, and at this point you've actually attained full calm abiding. Okay? And so you feel like you can completely absorb yourself in the object, and the mind is it's called calm because the mind is totally calm from distractions, totally calm from any kind of agitation or distraction to external objects. And it's abiding because the mind abides on this internal object, you know, whatever your object of meditation is. So this is a calm, this is full calm abiding. And this is what's called a preparation to a form realm concentration. I'm not going to go into describing. In the Anabhidharma, there's all these descriptions of the four form realm concentrations and the four formless realm concentrations. These are all different levels of samadhi that you gain. And this is a preparation to the form realm concentration. But it's a very, very good mind for meditation. Because sometimes if you get on the really high formless realm of concentration, the mind it's not so good for meditating on emptiness, they say. That this kind of calm abiding, you know, on the preparation level is much more effective for meditating on emptiness. Although, you know, many people still like to kind of attain these higher levels of absorptions. And you can hear all about them. I mean, the descriptions are pretty incredible. But I think we kind of have enough to work with right now. Okay. Now, some signs of having attained calm abiding is that you have this mental and physical pliancy, so the body, mind, totally pliant, completely cooperative, joins in your effort. There's no longer an internal civil war to do anything. Okay. And during your meditation, during meditative equipoise, the sense of appearances vanish, and the mind's just filled with incredible spaciousness. So there's not this kind of narrow tightness in the mind, but this incredible spaciousness. And then another quality is that you can abide firmly and steadily on the object, and even a sound is made nearby, like a cannon goes off, or, you know, one of those jets that break the sound barrier go by, it doesn't faze you at all. Yeah, doesn't interfere with your concentration at all. Another quality is that there's great clarity. You feel like you could count all the particles in the wall. The mind is so finely tuned. Meditation sessions, the manifest delusions are gone. You know, the manifest disturbing attitudes are gone. The seeds are still there. That's why you need the wisdom. But the manifest ones are gone. In the break time, also, they don't come up so much, and so it's very, therefore it becomes very easy to mix, let's say, your sleep with concentration. So you don't have so many things, you know, making the mind muddy and murky. So even when you sleep, you can be meditating. And then, when you arise from equipoise, there's a sense of getting a new body. Even though you might get some of the disturbing attitudes in your break time rising in a manifest way, you know, a little tinge of anger or annoyance or something, nothing really takes hold. It just kind of is there and then it's gone. You know, the mind's pretty smooth. And you can meditate as long as you want without any kind of discomfort, either physical discomfort or mental discomfort. So the state of calm abiding is something that is in common with other religious practices. This whole teaching on concentration is not a specifically Buddhist teaching. People in other religious traditions practice it. And in fact, they say that you know, many people, the Buddhists are always, you know, referring to the Hindus because that's the ones they have the most contact with in ancient India. I think here we're always going to compare Buddhism to Christianity, but this point probably holds for both of them. That sometimes the Hindus would actualize calm abiding and mistake it for liberation because the mind is so peaceful and calm and you don't have all these berserky thoughts going on that it's easy to mistake it for concentration. And that's why they say, first of all, that calm abiding isn't a strictly Buddhist practice. And why having the determination to free ourselves from cyclic existence is so incredibly important. Because if we don't have that determination, we might just get the calm abiding and then stay there with the calm abiding. And if you stay with the calm abiding, you have a great time for the rest of your life. And, you know, you create a lot of good karma from doing that. You might even, especially in this lifetime, if you actualize some of the form and formless realm absorption, then next time, you know, after you leave this human body, you could be reborn in the form realm and the formless realm, stay there for a few eons, hang out, be blissful, no problem. But because the mind still has the seed of ignorance in it, once that karma, that good karma of concentration has worn off, then the only place you can get reborn somewhere lower. That is going to be definitely more painful. Second Rinpoche said, when you go to the top of the Eiffel Tower, the only direction you can go from there is down. You know? And he used to say, if you get these form and formless realm absorptions, that's what happens. When that karma runs out, plunk. Okay? So that's why it's so important to have the determination to be free, conjoined with our calm abiding, so that that determination to be free actually moves our mind so that we then get the wisdom teachings and meditate on wisdom and actualize the wisdom, because it's but the realization of emptiness that is actually going to free our mind from all of this confusion and samsara. Okay? So when you have the wisdom combined with the concentration, then that's what leads to actual liberation. And the concentration in general is very, very helpful for all the other meditations we do, because let's say if we could meditate on the four immeasurables and have full concentration, we might actually have some sustained feeling of love or compassion, equanimity or joy in our heart for some period of time. Or if we're able to meditate on bodhicitta with, you know, calm abiding, then the bodhicitta can really sink in. And so it's the ability to concentrate that makes the other understandings get really integrated in the mind, because the concentration keeps that understanding there, you know. And so it's just that imprint is always getting made because the concentration is there. But the concentration alone isn't sufficient. Okay?